Welcome back to ITFM Insights, the podcast where we cover all things IT financial management. I'm your host, Kiara Zapanta, and we're continuing our special two-part conversation on rethinking IT planning for agility and uncertainty. If you joined us for part one, we covered why traditional IT budgeting cycles often fail and the risks leaders face if they stick with them. And today in part two, we're focused on solutions, you know, how to build an agile real-time IT planning model. And then once again, I'm joined by Konstantin Popov, the VP of Enterprise Technology, Strategic Portfolio Management and Finance with C-Prime. Konstantin, great to have you join us again. So let's just jump right in. When an organization, you know, decides to shift towards a more agile IT planning approach, what's the first thing that you would recommend for them to change?
So I would take a look at your business processes and look at your ERP landscape, right? You need to make sure that you have the tools and the processes that can actually support that future way of working. A lot of time we see, again, the culture and the structure of organization, how the work gets done, and the systems that are in place to support it today that have been configured and put in place over many years. You know, how can they support this? And we see that a lot of our customers are pivoting away from the system that they have deployed 10, 5, 2 years ago to a new integrated solutions that they are putting together in order to take strategic advantage of the planning and execution and reporting process. And a lot of our customers, they have resorted to using third party, like, you know, we're going to put all of our data into a data lake and we're going to use these data marts and then, you know, a ton of Power BI reports, and this data is, you know, 30 days out of date by the time we're able to present this. Real-time decision-making process is extremely important. We see this in the financial sector. We have a lot of customers, largest banks, insurance companies globally that we're currently working with. And for whatever reason, that industry is transforming the fastest. And they're making significant changes in their business processes and in their data model and in their tooling. In some cases, we see them rationalizing their technology landscape in ERP space from 20 plus applications down to 7. And they're looking for integrated solutions with integrated data models that can give them that opportunity to make data-driven decisions around pivot or persevere with the investments.
Got it. Yeah, that was a good story. So I guess, like, once that initial shift is made, you know, I think the real test really comes into practice. So can you give like a concrete example where scenario modeling, you know, really changed a funding decision in real time?
I'll give you an example, right? It's a lot of our customers, they're coming from an outdated project resource planning systems where you have roles. I have a developer, I have a tester, you know, and now we are seeing that there is more of the demand for skills. We are helping our customers be able to evaluate the investments and build a role-based, skill-based demand. An example is we are trying to take advantage of the agentic workflows, and we aspire to use these capabilities for, let's say, our portfolio management. And as a result, we have identified that we are going to need 40 data scientists with Python experience, and 5 of them need to have an MCP capabilities. How many do we have today? Well, we don't know because we're not using skills in our solution. So I can't, it seems like I have 40 people, but these 40 people don't have the skills that I need to do. So if I look on paper, it seems fine. I have 40 people that I can assign to it, but they don't have the skill set. So an ability to be able to create an additional dimension that talks about that talks about skills, all of a sudden give me a visibility to realize that I don't have anyone. And what is my cycle to procure that skill set? Like, you know, what is the lead time? Is that 30 days? Is that a year for me to be able to find a data scientist with Python and MCP experience? And like, I don't know that because now I need to be able to create that demand and work with my business partners and recruiting team to tell me, you know, what would be that lead time. As a result, I'm not going to be able to get to the project that I want to execute. And now I have to reassign these 40 people that I have that have a different skill set to something else. So that's one of the examples when you're using this kind of modeling, leveraging an additional dimension for planning. You can also, so you can make a lot of trade-off decisions in your modeling based on the investment required, the availability of the labor, and kind of the value at what cost. You can also look at your infrastructure, right, and see what are the enablers that are needed to build and visualize them. A lot of times we come to a technology organization with a request. It's like, oh, like we're going live, you know, here's what we need. And it's like, oops, it's going to be a 6 months lead time, right? So visualizing these enablers that need to be built to, in order to enable the engagement layer, you know, it also goes a long way.
Yeah, that was a good example. I guess like with agility, I think it can also backfire if everyone's working off too much noise. So, you know, how do you create cross-functional visibility without really drowning, you know, stakeholders in irrelevant data?
Irrelevant data. So when we're looking at cross-functional departments, one of the key things that we see is missing today is our ability to identify dependencies within teams and across teams. And we see that there are very few teams that have organized efficiently and effectively in value streams or product teams. We see a lot of dependencies across value streams, across product teams. So there's still some inefficiencies and opportunities there. So that ability to highlight dependencies from the very initial planning all the way down to once we're done with the project becoming increasingly important. And when we have modern systems that are able to visualize those dependencies and alert different teams of what needs to happen and when, right, when you don't have to have all of these alignment meetings, who is going to do what by when, and then everybody go in and build the plan, and by then they build it obsolete, right? When you can look at real-time dependencies and you can make real-time decision based on the dependencies, it goes a very long way. You also want to make sure that we are creating visibility. So again, I'll give you an example, a very simple one. It's risk and compliance, right? When we are looking to approve a piece of demand, risk and compliance, it's enterprise architecture is the key contributing factor to the approval. Usually the way that the approval is done is you fill out a SharePoint form and send it in into the abyss. You don't know when it comes back, you know, what's going to happen there. Sometimes there are SLAs, but they rarely follow. So we built these risk and compliance solution in portfolio management systems to actually visualize it in a Kanban fashion. It's like, okay, you know, here is how many do we have? Here's who's working on that. Here is, you know, here's the rules that we have for each one of the stages within our Kanban board, our WIP limits, right? I understand where my request stands. And we also want to use the systems that give you an opportunity to do a self-serve and automated notifications around when the status is changing. And also now we are deploying agentic workflows for provide people with a self-serve information regarding where their work is or where their requests are. And this is why we have been investing into building MCP servers for the technology that we're using for our partnerships to be able to do that. And that also goes that self-serve capability where you can leverage the agentic workflow to get your work done. It's a game changer.
Got it. Yeah. And I guess, you know, visibility alone won't really drive change if I guess the tools are weak. So what role do tools really play, you know, versus just improving processes and culture?
Improving processes and culture. Well, I mean, like I said earlier, I think that we are moving into the time when we are using technology strategically to achieve value, customer value and the enterprise value. And that, again, it comes from integrated systems and it comes from the fact that these systems can support these modern ways of working today. But most importantly, can they grow with the team? The times when we build a solution that, you know, a point in time and they can be static and monolithic, it is over. We need to be deploying systems that can continue to mature with the maturity of our organization and respond to challenges that are being introduced daily with modern technology, specific right now with all of the agentic workflows that are being introduced. And I mean, we are at the infancy with how we are currently leveraging AI, but it is growing so rapidly. We see customers 3 months ago that had no idea what to do with it. All of a sudden, they're solving extremely complex problems, leveraging AI in their portfolio of space, in their finance space, in technology business management space, in scenario modeling. And the technology plays a key part of it. When you have a tool that can support this modern way of working and the modern technology, it will give you an opportunity to outperform market and your peers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that balance between, you know, tools, integrated solutions that you mentioned and culture is really critical. But I guess, like, even with the right systems in place, you know, I think some leaders may worry that, you know, being agile could slip into being undisciplined or whatever. But, you know, how do you balance agility with accountability so budgets, you know, don't just become a free for all, I guess?
Absolutely. And this is when we are trying to visualize all of the demand that is coming into the organization based on customer and market research. We want to visualize the approval process in terms of how do we evaluate business demand and through some sort of a business development or business product management framework. How do we, so that gives us an opportunity to take a look at what is the size of the opportunity, and based on our market positioning our size and scale, what is the size of the opportunity we can take advantage of. And then we want to take a look, what will it cost to deliver and cost to serve? What does it cost me to deliver this to the market, and, you know, what kind of a team do I have to maintain to provide a consistent flow of enhancements in an areas of grow and transform to my customers, so I continue to, you know, achieve my strategic results, capture a larger market share, you know, or, you know, grow capabilities within that space. So that gives us an opportunity to create a true business value realization model, because we can now model our investment quarterly, and we can model our perceived revenue, right, based on the assumption that we made quarterly. And now if we are able to connect all of our execution to these line items, which are now investment decisions, and capture actuals on a monthly basis, we can visualize how well are we staying against the plan, right? And it can help us validate assumption, and we get better over time, right? So we need to, initially what we see is, okay, there is always opportunities, but as we learn, right, as we do and we learn, and, you know, we repeat that cycle, we come to a place where we get better.
Got it. And, you know, even with putting those guardrails in place that you mentioned, you know, I think you still need proof that it's working. So what metrics or signals, you know, really tell you that your new way of, like, continuous planning and budgeting is actually working?
Okay, like we still have the budgets, right? So we still have the forecast, we have the budgets, and at the end of the day, you know, we're being held accountable to some things. So with a capacity-based planning, we have a certain budget for a team, and now it becomes how much work we can achieve doing that. So it's all about efficiencies, right, and making sure that we can, you know, achieve the maximum amount of work, quality work, with the capacity of the team that we have. So a lot of investment will go into that. And we will be measured on, right, we are, you know, we have very specific targets for what we're going to release and when, right? And it's not just because we said so. Our market expects that, our customer expects that, we have marketing and sales organization, you know, that are going to market, promoting what is going to be released, right? And if we do miss that window, a lot of this stuff that we do is cyclical. It can be in retail, we may miss Christmas or Thanksgiving, right? And if we do that, we will miss out on a ton of revenue. So it is very important that we achieve the commitments, right, that we've set for ourselves. You right. It's hard to blow your budget. We see that in the cloud sometimes people overspend, and you need to have appropriate guardrails for what is being stood up in terms of your infrastructure assets. How are they being mapped to a product or a service? You know, are we turning off? Like, are we using them efficiently? Right, when they need it, are we looking at patterns? So there are a lot of things that we can be doing in order to be frugal and in order to minimize expense associated with the delivery of customer value. But it comes from putting together business processes around your FinOps, around execution, around efficiencies, and making sure that everything that is being done is in support of some sort of a revenue generation initiative. And then, right, once we settle the actuals, we'll be able to see how well we're doing.
Yeah, I guess those signals really do give leaders a way to, validate progress. But now, just to wrap up this episode, from your experience, if you could give, only one, if you can only give IT leaders one takeaway, to make IT financial planning more continuous and agile starting tomorrow, what would it be?
One takeaway. I mean, this is a hard question. One takeaway is hard. So I would take a look at what I said earlier. Can I plan in a way that I can visualize my investment into run, grow, and transform? And can I basically capture actual and the work that is being delivered for it? If I can do that, I'm in a good space. If I cannot do that, I probably need to take a look at the systems that I have strategically to make sure that I can visualize that investment. And also, just like the simple equation, like if we're looking at outcomes, do I understand the cost associated with the delivery of products or services to my customers? Number one, do I have the levers to optimize that cost? And then, do I understand my capital planning process, and am I optimizing it for a best possible portfolio of investment decisions? Right? If I can do that, right? So remember, I always talk about that McKinsey study from January 2023, when they said, listen, if I can help the company save 1% in expense, I will contribute up to 4% to net operating profit. But if I can help to increase price by 1%, I can contribute up to 10% to net operating profit. So if the technologies can actually do these two things, all of a sudden we can be contributing a lot of money to the bottom line of the company.
All right. Awesome. Well, that was a powerful note to end on. Some practical advice that, leaders can start putting into action right away. So Constantine, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your perspective on rethinking IT planning for agility and uncertainty. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to ITFM Insights. If you'd like to dive deeper into IT planning, visit the ITFM Insights page on apptio.com. That's APPTIO.com. And we've actually posted additional resources on this topic. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes where we continue exploring ITFM topics.